Greetings from BBS Radio, where truth and news still exist in the original form. The Spiritual Politician, the show that shows you where politics, government, and selfishness went wrong, and how you can take action to make it right. I'm Melinda Pillsbury Foster, your host for this hour of insight, aimed at making each of us more responsible, more cooperative, and more aware of the spiritual bonds that connect us, no matter what we find to bicker about in the interim. You can call us toll-free from the United States to 877-876-5227, from Canada to 888-810-8322, or you can call direct to 530-876-3222. This show is carried online, and you may also be able to get it on the air in your local area. To find out if an old-fashioned on-the-air station in your area carries this show, just contact us at bbsradio.com. The website for this show can be found on the BBS Radio site and at spiritualpolitician.blogspot.com. All past shows become available as soon as it is humanly or inhumanly possible on the station archives. My own blog appears on How the Neocons Stole Freedom, and this week it goes right along with what our guests will be talking about, the long overdue ratification of the ERA. In case the term is unfamiliar, that means Equal Rights Amendment. That article will be published in the Iconoclast, where I'm a columnist, on Monday. You can read it now at my blog. I'm going to share with you the very first part of that article now, just because I can, and because it gave my son a chuckle when I read it to him. If you heard the State of the Union speech last Tuesday, I know you'll appreciate this. Now, imagine you were a little bird in Karl Rove's office. You might have heard this.
Mr. President, have you read over the speech?
I know. It doesn't matter if Congress believes it. Pause. Of course the public will swallow it. Pause. Your friends will understand that you have to say you support alternative energy. Anyway, you already have the donations in for the library. Pause. Health care is an issue. Try to read those briefing papers. Pause. I do think it is a nice piece of work, yeah. And I like the new typeface. Just make sure you don't say her name that way on Tuesday night. Pause. Keep working at it. If you find any other words you don't understand, you just call back. And now some updates from the week just passed. Mrs. Blankenship, the elderly lady from Dallas we got to know because her votes were stolen by that Diebold machine last October, called to tell me about some updates on the action at Southern Methodist University. That online petition continues to grow longer, and Methodists and others continue to object to what they see happening here in America and in Iraq. Now it seems obvious that Bush's urge to surge is not treatable as America's Navy continues to converge off the shores of Iran. Very scary stuff. And now our thought for the week ahead. Last week, we heard from Bruce Stoller, a guy who's been working for over 20 years to make sure that the music does not stop for the children in Monrovia, California. After the show, he expressed a willingness to help others learn how they did it there in Monrovia. So if you're interested, get in touch with me, and I'll put you in touch with Bruce. From all over the country, people are now confronting the need to do it themselves, as government defunds while still asserting the right to control every part of our lives. Some of you may be aware that Ron Paul, that cantankerous congressman from Texas who is so disliked by the neocons, has taken out papers for an exploratory committee that will run for president. Don't expect to hear much through the regular media, however. The Ron Paul campaign must worry those who oversee the status quo more than we thought it would. You know that is the case when they print articles about it, all the candidates down to Mickey Mouse, but ignore you. Ron Paul, who has been a major pain in the side for this administration, standing up to vote against all the items on their fascist wish list, has met with astounding silence from the corporately owned media, while at the same time people are overwhelming his website. Paul will be flying to Iowa and New Hampshire for meetings with activists and supporters in just a few days. We will be having two guests tonight giving their insights on the subject I mentioned earlier, the ERA. Our first guest will be Cindy Young, and joining us around 4:30, we will have Jennifer McLeod. Cindy has been the president of Business and Professional Women in Arkansas and went on to become president of the organization nationally. BPW has been a major force in restarting the ERA campaign. Cindy is a businesswoman in Arkansas who spends a lot of her personal time thinking about the rights of women who hold only as privileges while their fathers, brothers, and sons know their rights are secured under the Constitution. You might want to ask why this matters. Tonight, Cindy Young is going to tell you why it does and what having rights affirmed by the Constitution will mean to women here in the country that is supposed to be the home of freedom for all. Please welcome Cindy Young. Cindy, are you there?
I'm here, Melinda.
Well, I'm so glad you could be with us this evening. This is going to be exciting.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me.
And we always start by asking our guests to tell us a little something about themselves. So please share. Tell us a little something about Cindy Young.
Oh, my. Where to start? Well, I am, as you mentioned, I'm a businesswoman here in Arkansas, and I have been very involved in the Business and Professional Women's Organization at all levels. I joined that organization in my local in 1986, and over the years have become really educated and informed on a lot of the issues that I think I always knew were important to me, but until I got into the organization and began studying some of the issues, didn't really know what to do about them.
Mm-hmm.
So I've become very active in this organization and other women's organizations since that time because of my exposure to these issues. I work in the field of human resources in a manufacturing company, and I have about 24 years in that field with a couple of different companies, and have traveled extensively overseas in some countries as well in my previous job. And so I have some exposure to women's status in other countries as well.
Mm-hmm.
I could go on and on, but I won't.
Any kids?
I'm sorry?
Any kids?
I have a stepdaughter who is married and doing well. I have no other children besides her, but she is the light of my life as she was her father's.
That's nice. That's always a good thing to know.
Yes.
Babies are a wonderful thing. And
yes,
kids generally are a wonderful thing.
You bet.
So you've been active in BPW for a long time, and BPW actually has a very strong relationship with the ERA.
Absolutely. Actually, we were one of the very first women's organizations on the national level to endorse the Equal Rights Amendment, and have a long history working for it. And in fact, our current legislative platform on the national level, as well as our state legislative platform here in Arkansas, states that first and foremost, that will remain on our legislative platform until equal rights is the law of the land.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's been one of the organizations that was most, on point and most tenacious. And very recently, the BPW actually started an ERA task force, right?
That is correct. It's been it's probably been up and operating in the current form for the last couple of years, but we have long had a very active role on the national level and in the states in the Equal Rights Amendment. But we do have a current task force that's very actively promoting the passage of those three additional states.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And you were at the rally on Wednesday.
Oh, yes, I was. I'm so glad I was.
That must have been such a heartwarming experience.
You know, it was tremendous. And I say that from the perspective of someone who was not involved in the push back in the 70s, but who, even back then, I was a young high school student and really didn't know what it was all about. But I knew people who were involved. And then to see Wednesday, to see so many people coming together of different gender, different age, different race, it was very heartwarming.
Mm-hmm. And at the rally, tell us about what that was like and who was there and who spoke.
Okay.
Did you speak?
You know, we estimate, and I know anytime you have groups like this, it's kind of hard to get a hard figure, but we estimate over 200 people were in the rotunda of the Arkansas State Capitol that day in support of the Equal Rights Amendment. But one of the things that we took the most pride in is that every constitutional officer of the state of Arkansas who just went into office in January were there, or one of them had to be somewhere else and sent a representative, but everyone else was there to speak in support of the ratification of the Equal Rights Amendment.
So this, in terms of the officers in Arkansas, it isn't even an issue. As far as they're concerned, it simply needs to happen.
Absolutely not. It was clear from the comments that they each made that they supported this, and in fact, one of our constitutional officers, Jim Wood, who is, I believe, the state auditor, has been a state legislator in the past, and he made the comment that he didn't have a vote, but you could be sure that his voice would be heard throughout the Capitol in support of the ratification effort.
Mm-hmm. And I understand that at least as of yesterday, the lower house in Arkansas had 67 co-sponsors out of 100 members.
That's my understanding. That's the latest information I have as well. And we're thrilled with that. We know that the battle's not done until the votes are cast, but we are extremely excited about the number of co-sponsors. And I will tell you that many of those state legislators were at the rally briefly. Several of them had to leave for committee meetings, but they were there, and the ones who were there were ecstatic to be able to support us. They signed a banner stating that they support the Equal Rights Amendment. We had a variety of them who made comments to individuals in the audience, but as I said, many of them had to leave before the rally was over, but we hit the hallways after the rally, so many of us had individual conversations with them afterwards as
mm-hmm.
well.
It must have been an amazing sense in the room.
It was. And you know, that was one of the things I commented to another one that I was standing by, was you could look around that room and see not just women and men who support equal rights grinning from ear to ear. And as they recognized that more and more people were stepping up to the microphone, whether it was a constitutionally elected officer or whether it was a legislator or whether it was a representative of one of the organizations that brought the rally together, everybody was smiling so big and so pleasant. You could see that everyone was just moved and excited to be a part of the day.
It was extremely interesting having that come after the State of the Union address.
Okay.
One day later.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't tell you how that just struck me.
Well, I don't want to disappoint you, but I doubt that any of us that morning were even thinking about the State of the Union
and
address.
And that's one of the nicest things about it, I have to tell you. Because how irrelevant it becomes.
You know, I don't know exactly how to address that statement, but again, you know, my focus, of course, and even that night, the night of the State of the Union address, I would venture a guess that the focus of Most of us here in Arkansas who were thinking about or were planning to go to the rally probably only half-heartedly listened to the State of the Union address at that time, because we had such plans for what we needed to accomplish both the next day and in the coming weeks.
And you really did have some wonderful support from the legislature.
We did.
The woman who actually presented the bill and dropped it in the hopper was Lindsley Smith.
Yes.
And she had a wonderful story about something that she had received from the family of an ERA supporter. You know that story, right?
Yes, I do. She shared that with us at the Capitol that day, and she had been contacted by the husband and children of the late Marjorie Rudolph, I'm recalling here, saying that they understood that she was behind, you know, getting this joint resolution to the House of Representatives, and that their late wife and mother had been involved in the ERA push back in the early 70s, and she had a bracelet, an ERA bracelet from that time. And they shared with Representative Smith that all of those years that she had hoped that the Equal Rights Amendment would be ratified, and so they wanted to present that bracelet to Representative Smith. And as you can imagine, for anyone who is so passionate about an issue, to have that kind of personal story come forward in the face of many who share opposing views on a very controversial issue, she was so moved by that she assured them that she would wear that bracelet proudly when she carried that bill forward. And, you know, those are the kinds of things that really touch the hearts of those who went through the push in the 70s and those like me who were not involved. I mean, it drives home the fact that while I've been interested in this issue for 20-something years, there are women who have, and men, I don't mean to just say women, but there are people out there who have been pushing for this issue much longer than me, and some of them who didn't live to see it come to fruition.
Mm-hmm. That's so true.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, as you mentioned, it has been a controversial issue.
Oh, sure.
It's divided people in a lot of different ways.
Sure.
Was there anybody there who wasn't supporting the ERA?
You know, I did not encounter anyone personally, but I do know that there were some. I talked with other people who encountered some who were either distributing literature, not in the rotunda, not where we were, which kind of surprised me. I expected them to be there as well. But in the halls of our state legislature later in the day, I did speak with some of my colleagues who did encounter some.
Did you take a look at that literature?
I did not. I did not get a copy of it.
Because I did talk to a couple of people who mentioned that it seemed to be simple reprints of exactly what they were putting out in the 70s.
And that may be. I honestly can't address that.
And do you remember the push in Illinois?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Recently.
Mm-hmm.
I heard a story from the ERA campaign coordinator there that really surprised me. And that was that Phyllis Schlafly actually did show up, and that she was late, and the ERA coordinator there was later approached by legislators who were embarrassed by the things that Phyllis Schlafly was saying.
Hmm.
And one of the things that she said was that if it passed, women would not only be in the military, but they would be in battle.
You know, some people are just out of touch. What else can I say?
And, you know, of course, I was around for the 70s, mm-hmm. and when I cast my mind back to the stories that we heard about what the impact of the ERA would be, of course, it was things like we were going to have to share the same restroom.
Right.
It was, when you look back on it, of course, now that all looks so different, because at the time it was, well, would we have to do that? And, of course, now we just laugh.
Yeah,
you know.
The first time I heard that, the first thing I wanted to say was, have you ever been on an airplane? That's right. I mean, you know, it's, and I know there are a lot of people who have not, but that's just an example. I mean, obviously, that argument, I don't think that we will hear much coming forward, because I think people, the majority of people do realize that argument is pretty much, pretty much out of touch.
So, yeah, of course, it isn't a done deal until you've counted the votes.
Right.
But, of course, with that many co-sponsors in the lower house, it looks really, really, really good.
Well, we think so, but at the same time, we also know that since we got quite a bit of media coverage for the rally on Wednesday and everybody went home feeling pretty good about it, we also know that many of those same legislators have now been inundated with messages who are of the opposing view. So the battle, even in the House of Representatives, is not done yet. We have to continue to be diligent about letting them know that they were correct in their first feeling that this was the right thing to do and why.
Mm-hmm. And you're doing that.
Absolutely.
You are crossing all the T's and dotting all the I's and talking to every one of them many, many times.
We are sure trying to. We're you know, in this technological age, we're certainly sending out emails to all of our supporters saying, we're not done. don't go to rest easy yet. We still have to keep them on the side that they started out on. Plus, we still believe that there are some of the legislators who can be brought to this side as well. So, you know, it's a continuous thing until they cast that vote.
What would you think if you actually got a unanimous vote?
Oh, my gosh. the easiest way for me to answer that, Melinda, would be it's about time.
Yes.
I mean, that's a simple answer. I would be absolutely thrilled in this day and age when there is so much divisiveness, both in politics and in every other aspect of our world. It would do my heart great things to know that 100 people in our state House of Representatives and 35 people in our state Senate recognized that it's long overdue that not women have equal rights, but that human beings have equal rights.
Mm-hmm. And that your gender simply doesn't matter.
Absolutely.
And what difference do you think it will make in terms of the way women live their lives and how they function? And this is something that some people who even are supporters of the ERA don't want to talk about, really.
Sure.
Because it gets into the area of speculation.
Absolutely. And quite frankly, anytime you're trying to pass a law or a constitutional amendment or whatever, it does get into speculation. I mean, it's like predicting the future. But, you know, I think initially there would be a lot of people who wouldn't see any difference. But I think, you know, the message that I keep trying to share with people, and I know you say, you know, saying you've been through it in the 70s, I know you know this is very true, that the most important thing is that right now the only constitutionally protected right that women have is the right to vote.
Mm-hmm.
Every other right that we've worked hard and that our predecessors have worked so hard to gain could be gone with the stroke of a pen.
That's right.
That sounds cliche, but it's a fact. I mean, you look at the recent attacks on Title IX, you know, I could go on and on. All it takes is a stroke of a pen to overrule those.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think initially people would not see a big difference, but I think that when it came down to the women or men who are facing cases of sexual harassment and sexual discrimination and on and on and on, then I think that they would start saying, you know, that makes sense to me now.
Mm-hmm.
So I think initially it's not like we're going to wake up the next day and everything's going to be rosy and it wasn't the day before. It's going to be something that's going, just like with any law or constitutional amendment, it's going to take time for the impact to be felt.
Mm-hmm. And there actually are other ways to look at it, too. And this has been something that's under discussion in other arenas about the Constitution and the fact that laws were passed that tried to modify people's behavior, force their behavior, to get them to do things that they wouldn't have chosen to do freely.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that could actually happen in the wake of a ratification would be the rescinding of laws that would then be things that treated men and women differently.
Absolutely.
And then that would be fine.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So just let's imagine for a moment a world where we have rebooted. So we're back in 1787. The Constitution has been ratified, but they just simply say, well, I guess that means that women can control their own property and they can vote.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that would be a very different world today, wouldn't it?
Absolutely.
When you think about how that would have changed history, it's just sort of mind-boggling.
Yes, it is. It is.
And there's hardly any incident in American history that wouldn't have been different because of that.
You know, I would venture to say that you're probably correct. There's a lot of events in American history to go back and review, but it definitely would have a dramatic change on the way America looks and operates today. I believe that completely.
Yes. And we would then probably be in a world where instead of having the government write marriage law, we'd be writing our own contracts.
Okay, well, that's a possibility.
So there are a lot of things that we're not sure. We're walking into ground that never has been trod before in human history.
That's true. That's true.
And that's exciting, and it's a little bit frightening, too, isn't it?
Absolutely. And that's the very thing I was thinking as you led into that sentence. It is exciting, but it also carries with it a lot of responsibility.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Those of us who are fighting to get the ERA ratified, once it's done, we can't just pat ourselves on the back and go home. We still bear some responsibility for making sure that it's not abused or for speaking up when we think that it is being wrongly applied. You know, it's never, I'm not sure that it's ever a done deal or a complete job. But as American citizens, you know, that's part of our responsibility.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, and I think that one of the exciting things about this is it frees all of us to really experience and be who we are.
And isn't that a great concept?
It is an amazing concept. It's so much like freedom.
Yeah. Imagine that.
Something
in America being about freedom.
That's right. America being about freedom. What an amazing thought. And see, you were in your teens in the 70s.
Yes.
When this was being discussed.
Mm-hmm.
What do you remember about that time?
You know, in a very, I guess, self-absorbed world, I don't remember a lot about, obviously the Vietnam War was being discussed a lot. I don't personally remember a lot about it other than I had an older brother who we were all concerned about being drafted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my world was pretty sheltered back then. I was worried about making the cheerleading squad and making good grades and having the boy that I wanted to date like me. You know, and I really wish that I could share something much more profound about how my activist roots were taking hold, but the fact is they weren't.
Well, and you know, that's a wonderful thing too, because that's the way we want it to be for our daughters.
Absolutely.
We want them never to have to think about this.
That is so well put. So well put. Yep.
So that, you know, that these things can simply happen. Now, you were very involved in the group that really kind of was focused on the BPW that helped make this happen in Arkansas.
Mm-hmm.
And there were other people who were also helping.
Oh, sure. We had the support of several different organizations who helped co-sponsor along with us this group, this rally. And then, of course, Representative Smith. And on the Senate side, Senator Sue Madison has also been extremely supportive, and she brought the resolution up in our last legislative session and then has agreed to do it again this session. So we've had much support.
And how does that feel? Because I remember what it was like when they shut the door and they wouldn't even talk to you.
Well, and we still have some of that. But, you know, and of course, you certainly have that from some of the legislators who don't agree with your position. But my position is we can't ignore those legislators because they shut the door in our face the first 30 or 40 times. You know, you just have to keep going back. So, you know, as far as how it feels to have a lot of support from these different organizations and from the number of legislators who have supported us, it feels wonderful. It feels absolutely wonderful. In addition to that, you know, our constitutional officers. I mean, mm-hmm. that's just phenomenal as well, even though I realize they don't have a vote on the resolution in the two houses. It still, you know, it carries some weight to be able to say that every constitutional officer in the state supports the ratification.
Well, it would certainly make you, this was a very much a campaign issue, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
Tell us about what happened when, I know that there were a series of debates and that BPW actually sponsored a debate.
This was a question that confronted
each of the candidates.
Yes. I want to say it was last February. I was actually serving then as the Arkansas Business and Professional Women's State Legislation Chair, and we held a legislative workshop on one Saturday in our state capital in February, and we invited all of the then-announced gubernatorial candidates to come and participate in a forum during our lunch period. And all of them, with the exception of one, accepted the invitation. And while they were there, one of the questions that we asked was, if you are elected governor, will you support the ratification of the Equal Rights Amendment? And then there was a follow-up question saying, if you support it, which all of the ones in attendance were on record as that they would support it, the follow-up question was, would you include it as part of your legislative package?
Amazing.
So we, you know, and we did have some media coverage at that forum, so we got them on record at that point. And we felt pretty good about that.
That is fantastic.
Yes, yes.
And I'm sort of wondering if, I heard a beep, is Jennifer on the line?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, hi. Well, I wanted you guys to also be able to say hello to each other.
Well, hello. I've been watching and listening. I've been listening and sort of looking at the computer screen with such interest that I realized that my supposed time to call had already gone by. It's 7:30. Very, very interesting, and I totally agree on everything that has been said so far.
Wonderful.
So.
Melinda, I appreciate the opportunity to say, talking with Melinda.
Yes.
When the time comes.
And Cindy, I'm so glad you could be with us. This has been fantastic.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to get our message out. I mean, it's, you know, and this is not by any means, I guess the one thing I want to leave with is, because I do have to get off now and pass the baton on to you and Jennifer. work commitments call, I'm afraid. But the one thing that I want to express always is that, you know, the Equal Rights Amendment is certainly not a partisan subject, and that's one of the things that we encounter. Sometimes people view it that way, and it certainly is not. And I know in one of the news reports that came out of the rally on Wednesday here in Arkansas was that several of the, especially the constitutional officers and some of the legislators, referenced Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. in some of his comments. And I think the one that I cherish the most and that I think is so appropriate in our work to get the Equal Rights Amendment ratified is the one that he said in a letter from a Birmingham jail, where injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. And I carry that with me because I think it is so true and
Amen.
So appropriate to our work here.
Well, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you
for what happened in Arkansas.
Well, keep your good thoughts coming toward us because we're not finished yet. We know that.
I know, and then we
have a lot of work to do, but we're going to do it.
36.
Absolutely. Thank you all.
Take care.
Good night.
Night. Well, Jennifer, welcome.
Well, hi, Melinda. I have so much enjoyed the conversation that you have with Cindy, and I'm very excited, as she is, about the prospects for ratification in Arkansas.
Yes, and this has been she was a teenager in the 70s, but this has been your battle for much longer.
Well, yes. I remember reading Betty Friedan's book, The Feminine Mystique, in the middle 1960s, and then becoming involved in the movement in about 1968-69, and just charging in. And of course the Equal Rights Amendment was kind of the keystone to it all, but we did a great deal, and our little NOW chapter in Princeton, New Jersey did a great
deal. You actually helped found that chapter in Princeton, New Jersey.
Yes, and I was the first president. It was the first chapter in New Jersey, and at that time, it's a little difficult for people today to realize just how severe the limitations were on women's lives, and particularly careers and working lives. It was just amazingly oppressive, and the opportunities were so heavily restricted. The stereotypes were so extreme. One example was the segregation of the Help Wanted ads. There were columns of Help Wanted male and Help Wanted female, and all the good jobs were in the male side, and you weren't allowed to even apply for those jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And this was just astounding. The only jobs for women were secretary, clerk, teachers, and nurses were the highest that you could aspire to, and house cleaners and maids and waitresses and that sort of thing, and that was it. And if you cannot support yourself, then you're helpless.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the lot for the vast majority of women. Now, I had been fortunate in getting quote male credentials with a degree from Radcliffe Harvard and then a PhD from Columbia, so that I was better off. But still, with all those credentials, I spent months in New York City trying to find a job, and the only job I could find was as a typist, and I wasn't a very good typist.
With a PhD, the job you could get was as a typist.
That's right, that's right, and just astounding. But I became very involved with that NOW chapter. We worked for the Equal Rights Amendment. I remember sitting at a table in the middle of Princeton, getting signatures and so forth. And but also in more specific, well, the ERA is very specific, but more issues within the pattern of trying to get equal rights and equal opportunities for women, such as the desegregating the Help Wanted ads and working to analyze the textbooks that were used in schools, which were full of stereotypes that discourage women, girls, from aspiring to anything other than being a housewife.
Mm-hmm.
And
there was a very strong push right after World War II to push women out of the
yes.
Marketplace where they had been,
yes,
and back into the home.
Yes, and that was World War II, where women went into the shipyards and the factories, and many of them whose husbands were shop owners, that sort of thing, had small businesses, and the women had to take their places and found, hey, I can do this. And then after the war, by law, they were required to give up all their jobs and as the men came home.
And that wasn't all either. Women who were in college were forced out.
Oh, yes.
So there would be room for men to come back and
yes.
get an education.
Yes, that was, it was a lot harder for girls to get into colleges. And when they were in there, they were just co-eds. They were sort of there to be decorative, and the assumption was that the only reason they were there was to find a husband, you know, an MRS degree.
Right.
That sort of thing. But it was It was extremely, those were very, very exciting days because there was a great amount of progress made in a very short time. And just a few years where it was, the moment was right. And there were a great many changes that began at that point. I remember in the media there was a suit against the New York Times because they had many women on the staff, but they were all called researchers, and they would do the reporting and the writing of the articles and the researching. But then they were required to allow a man's name to be put on the article because it was just not acceptable to have a woman's reporter's name on the article. And, of course, they were paid about half of what the men were paid for the same work,
mm-hmm.
and had no opportunity to advance. So there were a lot of that went on. Now, my degrees were in scientific psychology, and then I moved into social psychology and social research. So I had a great interest and involvement in what was happening in society and the great trends, the revolutions in society and cultures and so forth. So I was kind of a student of all that, but at the same time an activist, which was very exciting indeed.
And it was, it must have been so exciting for you because you had seen such a transition.
Yes.
And then, of course, there was, after that, I always had the feeling that women felt like it was opening up and anything was possible, that we were going to march right through into the ERA.
Well, that didn't happen. And you already addressed that with Cindy, that what happened, the opposition rose up. And the opposition, although the arguments given were the kind that Phyllis Schlafly had, you know, unisex bathrooms and women in the military and so forth, but the real opposition, the real cause of the opposition were large corporations and other institutions, including educational institutions. But mainly the large corporations with the deep pockets. The corporations based their economic success and their assumptions of economic success on having vast numbers of women employees at the lower levels paid only a little more than half of what they should have been paid, even for the work that they did, and of course those corporations got really worried about, well, what would happen if you actually had to pay them what they ought to be paid, and worse yet, be permitted to move up.
Mm-hmm.
And it just shook their whole set of assumptions so badly that those corporations used the huge money, amount of money they had control of, to fight it in whatever way seemed to work.
Uh-huh.
Not
Absolutely.
Based on, oh, gee, look, the corporations are going to suffer.
You were one of the first women through the glass ceiling.
Pardon me?
Weren't you one of the first women through the glass ceiling?
Well, you know, all through my career, my professional career, I always seemed to be the first woman, and I was the first woman in the research department of this company and that company, and the first woman. Well, I got awfully tired of being the first because I was then expected to represent all of womankind, which is
that's hard.
And anything that I did less than way above the standard was then considered as proof that women couldn't do it. And of course, I was still getting vastly underpaid. But at the same time, it was very stimulating because I sensed that I was part of a mighty revolution.
Mm-hmm.
And since I've been studying, I've studied it a lot since then, realizing that women had been subordinated and dominated by the men in the human race for many thousands of years, and it was built into all the systems, all the institutions, built in just amazing number of different ways, including the clothes that you were supposed to wear, and the fact that as soon as a woman married, she became a, from terms of citizenship, she disappeared. That the husband was defined as head of the household and the decision maker, and in fact, until not long before those years, the fathers owned their wives and owned their children and could determine what they could and couldn't do and how they lived and so forth. So and that had been the pattern for thousands of years in almost every society.
Yes. And in our lifetimes, it was 1953 in California where a married woman had a right to her own paycheck.
Oh, yes. I mean, what an outlandish idea that was. You know, during the Depression, during the Depression years, before I was born, I was born, but I was a small child, the paychecks that women got automatically were given to the husband. The husband could go pick them up. And the women... The men, when jobs were short, women were hired only if they couldn't possibly find a man to do the job. So that was still continuing in those years. So you look at what has happened actually starting in the middle 1800s, that this incredible revolution of freeing the female half of the human race to be fully human.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is astounding. When people say, well, what were the biggest, most important things that happened in the 20th century? They talk about, you know, nuclear age, computers, airplanes, jets landing on the moon and so forth. But from a broader standpoint, you could say, well, the really, in the long run, the greatest thing that happened during the 20th century and is still going on today was the freeing of half the human race to be fully human.
That's right.
Not been allowed
Absolutely.
To be that before.
There's so many different things that are different for us than they were for, you know, just two generations ago. That
but
it's simply
still,
mind-boggling.
It is, and we live in different worlds than they were,
mm-hmm.
And that is from the point of view of women's rights, that was largely the doing of just a few hundred women who achieved suffrage, and then in the second wave, starting in about 1963 to 1975, moved it way well ahead, but we're still not there, which is why today I'm national coordinator of the ERA Campaign Network.
Right, and that was an organization who's coming into existence actually started and put all of this in motion.
Well, and the current, it certainly put the current efforts for the ERA. There had been groups working on it since the early 1990s when the three-state strategy, the so-called three-state strategy, was developed.
And that's what we're following right now, really, in Arkansas.
Yes, and that's what's happening right now in Arkansas. And,
so that we don't have to start over, we only have to get three more.
That's right, that's right.
And that's exciting.
It is indeed.
This make you
and,
feel?
But the effort is, it's tough going because people are very concerned about a lot of other things, and the women prefer to think, oh, well, we've got it all now, when we don't. And Cindy put that very well when she said, look, all the legislation that we worked so hard for, which is all very nice, but it's not held. It's not based on the constitutional rights. It's just legislation which can be changed and often is changed, rescinded entirely, or not enforced. And that happened
actually in New York in the 1850s.
Tell me about that.
Married women, Elizabeth Cady Stanton actually went in and they established some rights for married women, and then they were rescinded.
Oh, yes, yes.
There's precedent. It could happen.
Oh, yes. Well, and there have been efforts that we can cite the efforts to water down Title IX, which have been successful. The Title IX that defining that women and girls are entitled to equal rights in educational institutions, including in athletics. And just in the last few years, the rules for Title IX have been weakened substantially, and there's still more effort to weaken it some more. And we can try to take something like that up to the Supreme Court, but the Supreme Court, especially a Supreme Court that is fundamentalist in terms of looking at the wording of the Constitution, they can look at the Constitution and say, well, you know, it's nowhere in the Constitution does it say
that
this is not allowed.
That's right.
Therefore, it's left to the lower courts or the legislatures, and in fact, the Supreme Court today can say, well, if the people want equal rights for women, they gotta amend the Constitution. Well, that's what we have to do, and that's what we're trying very hard to do.
And that's what we're going to do.
Yes.
And Arkansas is one. And there's three states. Florida has an active drive. Illinois has an active drive.
And Missouri, which it came very close to ratifying a few years ago, but then the makeup of their legislature changed somewhat, and they dropped back. But they're still actively organized. Mm-hmm. And other states, we figure that when Arkansas or any other state ratifies, and you only have two more to go, that others will wake up and say, hey, we want to put this one over.
Amen.
You know, we don't want to be the last. We don't want to be a state that refuses to provide equal rights for their female citizens.
Yeah, absolutely.
Women are more than a majority of the voters.
And I know it's going to happen because the time has
come.
It
will happen. It will happen. And we're doing our best to be ready to help, not only help make it happen, but then follow through and make it really meaningful to everyone.
Yes, well, and I know it's going to happen. Well, thank you, Jennifer, for being with us today. It's been wonderful.
Oh, it was a
great pleasure. You've been fantastic, as you always are.
Oh, thank you.
And
you
have a wonderful weekend, and I know we're all going to be holding our breath for the vote.
Right.
Yes, so you take care.
Okay, Linda. Bye.
Thanks. Good night. And that's our show for today, Friday, January 26th, 2007. Here at The Spiritual Politician, we're working to help individuals find ways to bring government into alignment with the way we know we should be treating each other personally, in business, and at every other point in our lives. Freedom in doing the right thing matters every place, and being equal matters most of all. On this show, as we do with all our shows, we end by reading that section of the Declaration of Independence that is America's mission statement. We hold these truths to be all self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed, that when any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, It is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it and to institute new government, laying its foundations on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. Prudence indeed will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes, and accordingly all experience has shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations pursuing invariably the same object evidences a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty, to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security. This is Melinda Pillsbury Foster coming to you from BBS Radio. God bless the journey that brings us to freedom. And may God be with you every step of the way. Good night.